This is a podcast from RTE Radio 1.
Hello and welcome to Audioscope. What's it like for parents of children who are blind or vision impaired? I'm joined in studio by Chris Maxwell, Patsy Ash, Bernie Byrne, and in Limerick is Mary Stunden. They're all members of the Committee of FEIRC. FEIRC is the association for, or a support group for parents of children with visual impairment. Chris, you're the chair of it. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're a voluntary group and we're nationwide. And we were set up approximately 12 years ago. And our aim is to try and help and advise people in situations similar to our own. The committee have children with a variety of eye disorders, so generally when people get in touch with us, if we don't actually have an answer, somebody else on the committee might or would know of somebody that could possibly help.
So I know FEIRC relatively recently had an open day. Is that something that you frequently do?
We've been having, previous to the last 3 years, what we had were AGMs, and then we thought the idea of AGM maybe put some people off coming. So we decided to turn it into a family information day and also to move it out of Dublin. So for the past 3 years, 2 years ago, we went to Portlaoise, and last year we went back to Portlaoise, and this year we went to Cork. And we just thought it was good to get it out of Dublin because FEIRC is perceived perhaps by people as being a Dublin-based organisation, but really we're trying to be there for everybody all around the country.
Well, we know it's not entirely Dublin-based. Mary, you're obviously based in Limerick.
I am, yeah.
And how have you been involved in FEIRC?
Well, I've known FEIRC for a good few years, but I'm just a committee member now, but I would have known of FEIRC years ago when my child started school, and if I needed any help, I would ring them up. But I have just recently gone on the committee for Limerick because there isn't a spokesperson down here.
And what kind of support does FEIRC? You said that you first contacted FEIRC when your child was going through school. What was that like for you? Your child obviously is blind or vision impaired.
He's totally blind. And we wouldn't have support or the services down here that they would have in Dublin. So FEIRC have been a great help for us, especially where education is concerned, you know, kind of guiding us towards what our rights and what he's entitled to. At the best of times, it's a struggle to get it, but at least, you know, those people that are on the FEIRC committee have gone through it before me.
And are most of the committee people that have children who are slightly older and who have gone through the things? Bernie, are you on the committee at the moment?
I'm secretary of FEIRC. The parents that are on the committee have children who are either blind or visually impaired. Some of them are in mainstream schools, some are in special schools. So we cover right across the board. Not just mainstream school.
And how have you been involved in FEIRC, or what kind of support or what kind of value has FEIRC been to you individually?
Well, I remember way back years ago, my husband spotted a little ad on the back of the Times, which was FEIRC and a contact number. And I rang that and I spoke to Marie McCarthy, who was one of the founder members of FEIRC. And it was brilliant just to have another parent to chat to. Somebody you could ask all the little silly questions that you couldn't ask a doctor, like, could I let my child ride a bike, or should I let him on rollerblades? Or it was just somebody to talk to. And the one thing about it is, when you speak to another parent that has a child who's blind or visually impaired, they really understand your worries and concerns. Nobody else will know what you're talking about unless you meet another parent in the same situation. And I think really that's the main thing about a support group. When you talk to other parents, they really understand what you're talking about.
And would you have had similar experiences, Patsy?
Well, absolutely. I find that my friends are now a big part of what FEIRC is. We've been around the country supporting each other and meeting new parents. Inevitably what has happened as well with FEIRC is that we've end up lobbying on behalf of parents and parents' need. As Mary mentioned there down in Limerick, difficulty with achieving, you know, the yes factor on a form when it needs a child needs a special piece of equipment. So we end up as a group lobbying on behalf of parents, maybe around and about the country, not necessarily for our own. I'm acutely aware that Mary recently had big difficulties getting appropriate technical equipment, and it would be one area we spend a lot of time on.
Technical equipment.
Well, it's a huge, exciting area, really. There's so much new technology coming in for blind and visually impaired children at the moment, that we would like to be able to, you know, move along and be sure that our children are being properly assessed and get the appropriate piece of equipment that's suitable for their disability or whatever their level of sight might be, and to follow that through as well with appropriate training.
But Patsy, it's just a bureaucratic nightmare trying to get the department to, you know, fund anything, as you know, and it just seems to take forever. Like we're a year and a half waiting for our young fella to get funding, and he's started secondary school.
Yeah, it's really erosive. We find most parents become totally worn out and put down, dispirited, and inevitably end up buying pieces of equipment themselves. Very expensive pieces
provided
of equipment.
Provided that they can afford them in the first place.
If they're lucky enough to be able to afford them in the first place.
So they don't get a family holiday, you get a piece of a computer.
And besides that, very often the students are quite aware of this dilemma within a household, and it can be a form of embarrassment or of hurt, and teenagers don't want to be made different or feel outside the box, and they've gone off and bought equipment themselves, which is rather a sad thing in this day and age of Celtic Tigers, that we have teenagers putting their hands into their own pockets and actually funding their own technical supports. I think that's a sad thing.
And that's exactly what we have had to do. We have had to send our young son back into first year with equipment that we had to pay for, that the Department of Education should have paid for.
Yeah, it's very erosive.
So it sounds like that FAIRC has a large kind of political, maybe with a small P as opposed to a capital P, a large political function. Is that what you think FAIRC is intended for, or is it a byproduct of the situation that's around us?
It's a byproduct of the system, really. Yeah, I mean, it's not what we would have wanted, really. I mean, we spend a lot of time lobbying the Department of Education for things that we would imagine are fairly obvious.
Yeah. And what's the problem? Why can't you?
Well, the Department of Education, there just seems to be major problems, say, you know, with the large print paper for exams, just putting the staple on one side of the page rather than the other seems to be a major problem. Asking a totally blind child to do a life drawing for the Leaving Cert, you know, it seems absolutely madness when there's other mediums a child could work through. And it's just not inclusive, and we would like the exam system to become inclusive for all children.
Yeah, it seems to be a pretty antiquated process. They're very slow to change. Any government department is very hesitant to invite change. We do a bit of, you know, up and down the road to Athlone, to special education, and at one of the meetings there we were told that, next thing you're going to want tailor-made examination papers for your visually impaired pupils. And I thought, well, isn't that what the sighted children already have? You know, they have full access to papers that are fully legible to them, and yet the blind and visually impaired children were made to feel that bit different. Slow to change and slow to accept that one size does not fit all. You know, inevitably we find that there's a sighted solution offered for a non-visual problem, and we have difficulties with that.
Because every eye condition is different, and every child is different, and everyone has different preferences. And
I think Mary at the moment is having a problem now in Limerick getting Braille maths for her son, who's in first year and who would be good at maths. And she's having great difficulties there. Maybe she'd tell us about that.
A huge problem for us is that we don't have a specialised teacher who's Braille maths literate. And that's a huge problem for us. And it's absolutely crazy because there are specialist teachers in Dublin that, you know, should be able to come down here. If it's available for kids in Dublin, it should be available for down here and everywhere else. And it's really not giving, you know, kids like my son a chance in education.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, Mary. You know, if they don't have access to Braille at an early age, you know, there's a huge section of their learning ability closing down immediately. Yeah. And you know,
or large print, or print with appropriate magnification.
Exactly that.
You know, standard print with appropriate magnification for partially sighted children.
Yeah.
And if the kids don't get the help themselves, they will switch off.
Well, there's something here that I'd like to bring in, and it's pertaining to the teaching of Braille and I suppose access to large print is only, by the way, to this point. So it's really for blind children that I'm speaking at the moment. And that would be that we should have maybe more inter-agency collaboration.
Exactly.
You know, that we have got regional network offices of NCBI, the National Council of the Blind, nationwide. We have got goodwill and good spirit from them, and we have a huge amount of experience there in the teaching of Braille, and yet offers of help in this area have been turned down by the Department of Education. We find it absolutely incredulous that we've got children around the country in need of Braille teaching, and yet the services offered by the National Council of the Blind are presently being turned down by the department. Mm-hmm. So presently there's no inter-agency collaboration at all between health and education and science.
And your son, on the other hand, he's not totally blind.
No, he has some sight.
Would he have experienced similar difficulties? Obviously, presumably he's not a Braille reader.
No, he's not a Braille reader. He uses large print.
Are there similar difficulties for him when it's talking about print as opposed to Braille?
Yeah, the large print. I mean, he doesn't use a magnifier. He prefers to hold the book very close to his eyes, and he reads that way. But, I mean, initially in primary school, we got books enlarged into large print. And that was fine in primary school when he just had maybe one or two books. But when he moved into secondary school, I mean, volume of Romeo and Juliet took up most of his locker. So it just wasn't practical to bring books into the classroom. He didn't know what chapter the teacher was going to be discussing that day. So he ended up, he didn't use it. So the large print books are not really suitable in secondary school. So by default, I did get a few of his school books on laptop. And that was brilliant because he could enlarge the print to whatever size he want. The only thing he had to carry around from classroom to classroom was just his laptop. So that was a huge improvement. But we would very much like to have school books available on CD. And I know there's a new DAISY system in at the moment, and we're hoping to develop this and get all the children's school books if they want them on CD, but they're readily available to them. But this seems to be a major problem at the moment to try and get this done. There seems to be a copyright issue.
Yeah. Well, DAISY and access to information and things, I think, are a whole other programme that we can sort of talk about for many hours, but I know our time is relatively limited. So the political, unfortunately, lobbying and campaigning is one aspect of Faith's work, and it seems unfortunate that it's a major aspect of your work. What other things do Faith do?
As well as our Family Information Day, we've done a series of sort of outreach meetings when we've been to Donegal and Galway and Waterford and Athlone and places like that, and just meeting people there. And just talking about their problems and, you know, if we can be of any assistance. And also when we were in Cork, we went to the guide dogs on the Sunday morning. And that was very interesting because there were actually parents in Cork that knew the guide dogs were in Cork, obviously, but thought that all they did was guide dogs. So that was sort of a revelation to a lot of people that they could actually access help through the guide dogs.
Yeah. And there's a child mobility service within Cork.
And they didn't, guide dogs. Yeah. They didn't know that, you see. So it's to get the information out there, really.
Yeah, the child mobility service is a new thing that's coming online insofar as the Department of Education are for the first time giving funding to Irish guide dogs for this. So the mobility training officer down there is very busy at the moment, Victoria. And she's really helping out very much in the Munster area. Mm. But certainly parents were telling us 2 weeks ago that it was one of the best kept secrets, that they hadn't any idea that guide dogs, Irish guide dogs, were doing anything but guide dogs.
But Patsy, again, like, I'm in Limerick, and I asked if there was any chance of her coming to Limerick, and even though it's funded by the Department of Education, I was told no.
Well, we know it's that only really for the Cork stretched area. Yeah, the service is certainly going to have to be extended. Definitely people are feeling outside the loop when it comes to mobility training. But besides the lobbying and the travelling around the country with our support group, we had a fun day in Wexford during the summer when one of our committee members ran a barbecue down at the seaside, and a whole load of new parents came along to that as well. So it was a nice social way to meet people.
And also next May we're having a golf classic, and it's in aid of the guide dogs and the National Council for the Blind, and we're hoping that both charities will use the funds raised for child-based activities is our hope for that day.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to come golfing, ring us.
Well, maybe what we should do is get in touch with you, or if you could get in touch with us closer to the time when we can announce it on the Audioscope notice board.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Closer to
the 11th of May, anyway, 2007, in Carton House.
Plenty, more fun.
Plenty of advance warning, so everyone has to keep that date.
The other thing that we're busy doing as well, besides running around the country, as we say, is producing a newsletter, and Bernie Byrne is the person who really has produced the newsletter over the last couple of years, and she's done a super job.
What's involved in it, Bernie?
Well, this year there was just different people submitted articles. I mean, what we try to do is maybe just put pieces of advice in the newsletter that could be of some help to somebody else. In this year's newsletter, there's a lady that got glasses for her daughter, and she just said this made such a difference. And she had been to loads of different consultants about getting glasses, and nobody had come up with anything. But this was a special blue filter that was in the glasses, and that just made a huge difference to her, you know. So it's just people's experiences, or if people come across some piece of advice or some piece of information that may be useful to other parents, we try and put it in the newsletter that could be of some help to them.
How important is the newsletter, in your view, to the organisation?
Well, it's really to let people around the country. I mean, we have a committee meeting once a month during the school year in Dublin, and apart, as Chris mentioned, our regional meetings that we try and get to around during the year. We'd like to do a lot more and to get to meet people around the country more. But we just, because we're a small voluntary organisation and we all have full-time jobs as well, we only just do this part-time. And so from that point of view, we just can't. So the newsletter is just to let people know around the country what we're doing and what's happening in FEAC. And if anybody would like, you know, to get the newsletter or to put on our mailing list, definitely do get in touch with us.
We'll definitely get those contact details at the end. If I were to say go along to one of your either regional days or your national sort of open day type things, what could I expect? What do you do? Is it just people sitting in a room talking?
We would have speakers that would talk. This year we had three different speakers. We had Stuart Lawler came down from NCBI and spoke about the DAISY and
alternative formats.
And then Victoria Ellett actually came and spoke about child mobility. And we had Brian Butler, who's in UCC. He has a PhD in history, and he's working in research in UCC. And we also had Ronan McGurk, so we had four speakers. And Ronan works in IT in banking. So they sort of spoke really about...
Were all of these people blind or visually impaired?
Yes.
Bar Victoria
Elliott. The other three people were actually all blind. And it was just very interesting listening to them as to, you know, Brian spoke about how he got through university and, you know, the access officers in Cork UCC, you know, how they helped him and how it was such a small office when he started off and where it's got to now. And Ronan spoke about just his work. And it's just very interesting for parents, I think, to see that at the end of what they might see as a black tunnel, that there is light and that people do come out of it and that they can end up in meaningful employment and, you know, get a good career and a life out of it. I think a lot of parents are very frightened as to what's going to happen to their children. And we're also involved with a group called AHEAD. And research that they have done shows that out of, say, all the disabilities, deaf, whatever, that blind and visually impaired people have the fewest number of people going through to third level education. And this is something at the moment that we're doing research on and would like to find out why this is happening. Is it because when they get to secondary level that, you know, is it the lack of Braille teaching that the children just find it too difficult to continue and drop out of schooling, or, you know, what is happening?
So it sounds like you have speakers in. Are they, you know, providing information, but also the kind of the idea of it sort of almost inspiring parents that there's life at the end, or that that there are things.
Definitely.
Do you think that's something that's important? I'm wondering if somebody is a parent and realises that their child is blind or vision impaired and has no contact whatsoever with the world of blind or vision impaired people. It must be difficult to know.
The hopeful note really at the end of a family day might be that they go home and realise that, you know, blind and vision impaired children can have a life, don't have to be Superman or Superwoman, that they can hold down regular jobs and run families and homes. And if any one new set of parents goes away with that awareness, it's a successful day out for us. Lots of kiddies came along this year as well. We had a children's room, which was nicely organised by a kind friend in Cork who had sets of arty type things for the kiddies to play with. And I'd say there was maybe 20 children at one stage in that room. So we tend to try and look after the entire family on things days like this, because it's difficult for ordinary families to get minders in place. But in fact, it's quite nice for these kids to network together as well.
I remember as a teenager, it was my first sort of contact with other blind or vision impaired people my own age, apart from people within my own family. And I remember sort of, again, it was sort of my parents meeting other parents of blind or vision impaired people. And it was really kind of an eye-opening.
Absolutely. And I mean, they all swap notes. We've got quite a number of members who are also albinism members of the Albinism Association. And I hear them passing fashion messages with each other and how to cope with various items that might be issues for them. So it's a huge part of it. And as Chris said earlier, the younger members of FAIRC are threatening to start a FAIRC OGA type organisation and just mix and pass the word along. The bottom line with FAIRC
socialise.
Exactly.
If most of your children are kind of getting into the teenagers or are already within the teenagers, there's a whole area. Maybe what we could do is ask you to ask if any of them would like to come into Audioscope, because it's such a teenage years are such an interesting experience for blind and vision impaired people. So maybe that's a whole other program.
It would be a really nice forum, because certainly when they meet at the family days, there's a whole load of information.
And I also think the children are getting to meet one another through St. Joseph's. Yeah. St. Joseph's seem to run quite good things for the children.
Mary, it sounded like you were agreeing with some of the things that were being said there.
I'm kind of more on the outside, because a lot of the things that are going on in Dublin, and it isn't as easy for us to get up, you know, when things are happening. But, you know, we do try. But it's great to meet with the parents and the people on FAIRC and even hear their feedback of, you know, how their kids are doing. You know, it's really important.
Mary could take her son, couldn't she? Aren't you involved in the water skiing? That happens in Cork, doesn't it?
No, that's not.
I should get involved in water skiing. I'm very biased when it comes to water skiing.
He wouldn't be interested in that, Mary, you know?
I'd say he's interested in anything. He's game for anything.
But you could go to Cork for that.
I could,
that's not too far.
No, not really.
And the other thing that my daughter's weighing to Mary is blind sports are a big part of what's happening around the place as well for certain age groups. Tandem cycling. You know, all you need is a road and a helmet and a pilot.
And a pilot and a tandem.
A pilot
and
a lot of faith for the fellow who's piloting it. But it's a great sport, especially for youngsters to get out and about.
And we have an extension on one of our bikes for my son. And it's what it is
a half bike.
Yeah, it's a handlebars without a front wheel. But we've told him that it doesn't go unless he pedals. So he's there pedalling for his life.
He's the engine.
I've had an awful lot of discussions with people on the backs of tandems, and I've been accused of not pedalling, and so I stopped pedalling, and then I have no more accusations. So I suppose that those are other aspects, I suppose, that parents may not necessarily know, that, for example, Irish Blind Sports exists, and that there are goal ball and there's swimming, and that there's all these different sports around the country as well, some of them. Is that, it seems to me, what I'm getting from the discussion, that it's almost like an advocacy role, or it's almost like this one way of sharing information.
Well, we don't believe in keeping secrets at all. We try to share the word. If anybody gets a key of information, such as how to apply for, you know, maybe the domiciliary care allowance, or the mystery thing of there's apparently an allowance for driving your children to and from school if they're visually impaired or non-sighted, that you actually get mileage paid by the Department of Education. So we've lists and lists of entitlements. As soon as we hear about something new, we try to pass the word. So I suppose we, besides supporting parents, try to pass as much information around as we can. And just the tiny spin-off from that then is really the lobbying on behalf of anybody.
And I think the support is a huge thing, because I would never speak to any of my friends about my son, because they wouldn't understand. And I think you have to be in those shoes to understand.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest things about FEAC, and having spoken to so many parents around the country, they'd all say that to actually speak to another parent in the same situation.
It's really important.
And even with our Family Information Day, that's one of the big things afterwards when we all sit around and have a chat with a cup of tea. Yeah. Just to chat to other parents, it can be really great, because you'll always pick up bits of information that you weren't aware of, or something that some other parent came across.
Yeah. And in that regard, you know, anybody is entitled to get the FEAC newsletter. And on the back of the newsletter, we've got all of the phone numbers and email contact numbers.
People all around the country, aren't
all around the place.
Range of places.
If anybody felt like joining our committee from Donegal or anywhere like that,
they can do it sort of at a distance. They don't have to get to Dublin to be part of it.
We're running out of time, so what the main message, if there are parents out there who do have children who are blind or vision impaired, get in touch with FEAC.
Get involved.
Absolutely.
Involved or welcome. In touch to find out, at least get more information. How should somebody get in touch with FEAC?
Well, we can send out their newsletter. We also have a website, is feac.net. We can...
Feac, F-E-A-C-H dot.
F-E-A-C-H, that's right. I have all our telephone numbers here. If you want me to give... I can contact me and I'll give you my number. Will I give out my number?
If you want to.
Yeah, my number is 493-4947. That's it's a Dublin number. Yeah. And I'll put you on the mailing list and we can put you in touch with other people.
Okay, so that's Bernie Byrne and your number.
My number.
Great. And all of your information then on the website in terms of contact details?
We are updating our website at the moment now. We're aware it does need a lot of attention, but we are putting it, we are updating it. Just also like to mention as well that this year our newsletter was sponsored by Corla.
Okay.
And we really appreciate their
And anybody support. Can have it. You don't have to be a member or have to attend meetings or whatever else. Anybody's entitled to it. And we've contacts in Wexford, Cork, Waterford, all around the place.
So at least you know what's going on,
Limerick,
so you make the decision.
There's Mary down in Limerick as
and
well.
And I'm sure the NCBI would have a lot of our numbers if people, you know, couldn't
exactly
get onto
that.
The FEAC website.
Absolutely.
Okay. What we can do is put some of your numbers up on our own website, the Audioscope website
really
as well,
good,
so that can pass the information on.
Yeah.
So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
All of the best, and hope that the lobbying doesn't have to continue for too long. And it's
maybe
more like
you'll see one of us in the doll one of these days.
Thank you.
In the meantime, cups of tea and support sound good.
Thanks very much.
Bye bye.
Thank you very much to Patsy Ash, Bernie Byrne, Chris Maxwell, and Mary Stundon in Limerick. That's it for this week. Goodbye.
You've been listening to a podcast from RTE Radio 1. For more details of our podcasts, visit rte.ie/radio1.